Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I'm here to tell you right off the bat that I am not guilty of any criminal wrongdoing, that I intend to stay on the job, and I will fight this thing every step of the way. I will fight, I will fight, I will fight until I take my last breath. I have done nothing wrong, and I'm not going to quit a job the people hired me to do because of false accusations and a political lynch mob.
On the one hand, government has a responsibility not to undermine the private enterprise system. On the other hand, government has a responsibility to safeguard the broader health and stability of our economy. Addressing the challenges in the auto industry requires us to balance these two responsibilities.
Welcome to the Savage Nation, the only antidote to George Bush and Blagojevich, because to me they're one and the same with two different faces. It's a Hydra. We have a Hydra head running every government in America, state, local, city, federal, doesn't matter. Here's a guy caught on tape saying a certain amount of money for a Senate seat, and he says he'll fight, fight, fight. Here's Bush, Mr. Free Market Capitalist, becoming a socialist. But who was the first of the media to call Bush a fiscal socialist? Hello, it was me. And then, of course, we had to conclude the opening on the Savage Nation today with Teddy. Doug put this together. Doug Lynn, you did a great job. He found various Teddy barking sounds and put together the jingle bells. I don't know how he did it, but it really made me laugh. Could you do the jingle bell thing for a minute? Because I have other stories to talk about in the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website.
Jingle bells are the way. And what fun it is to ride in your horse open sleigh. Hey, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle bells the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in your horse open sleigh.
That is not bad, Doug. Doug, thank you very much. They know that this has been the worst week of my life in radio. And I don't know why. I tell you, I think the news is so depressing. You've never heard me in my 15 years in radio sink to this low. I have never seen corruption so nakedly played out in daylight with no ramifications. When I saw Bernie Madoff smirking at the mob of reporters as he went back to his $9 million jail cell, I knew it was all over. I knew he knew something that no one else knew, that only the smirk, only the audacious smirk could tell you. It means he owns the judges all the way up to the White House, and he ain't going away for a day, Johnson. Now, of course, it's true if your son jumps at subway turnstile in New York, he goes to the tombs for 30 days right off the bat. Smoke a joint, go to jail. Jump a turnstile, go to jail. Steal $50 billion. Stay out of jail in your $9 million apartment, because that's the way the system should be. Because, you know, in the end of times, in addition to the secret handshake, there's the mark of the beast, where only those who have a certain mark are allowed to do certain things. Now, although there's no biblical mark per se that we can see, although there was in ancient biblical times a mark that was used to denote the elites who could do business with each other, there are subtle markings today in the end of times that have nothing to do with a mark. It has to do with a certain quality of donation That's the new mark of the beast. In other words, the more you give, the more you get. So if you look at Bill Clinton, and you see the good old boy Bill Clinton turned into the ancient lands of Arabia, and he became basically a sheikh of Arkansas, you realize that the money put into his personal ATM by Saudi Arabia and other countries, you think they put it there because they wanted pork rinds? Why do you think the desert despots gave the charity of Bill Clinton millions upon millions of dollars? It's because they wanted pork rinds. No, it's not because they wanted pork rinds. The desert-dwelling donors, billionaire Saudis, gave to his William J. Clinton Foundation an awful lot of money. Now, why did they do that? Well, they did that so that when Hillary Clinton becomes Secretary of State, she will look the other way when they want something else in the United States of America. And that's why I say, although the Bible said there, in the end of days, there'd be the mark of the beast, denoting those who were a member of the inner circle, we don't actually need a mark of the beast to see who the members of the inner circle are. Just follow the money, Johnson. The phone number today is 1-800-449-8255. There are such other stories that I'm afraid to even tell you about, because if I begin them, it means I have to end them. And if I have to end them, I'm going to get sick. And I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I have the guts today to get into these stories. Things got so bad over the last 5 or 7 days. And I don't know what to ascribe it to, but it's melting down rapidly. Okay, I'll start at the top of my website. We read about the Bush bailout, loan to the auto industry. You say, well, Bush is just trying to save jobs in Detroit. Well, on the face of it, if you're if you work in the media, that's how you could look at it. Or let us say you went to the fourth grade and you hit a 50 or 60 IQ, even with fish oils, you could say that Bush is bailing out the auto industry to save jobs. But if you have an IQ that breaks the two-digit mark without fish oils, follow the money. I have this on my website. No one else has it yet. And I ask a question. Why would George W. Bush choose to bail out two companies controlled by Cerberus Capital Management, which is controlled by Bush cronies? And here's the answer. Go on to my website. Bush gave General Motors and Chrysler LLC up to $17.4 billion today, in a loan, of course. Now, that sounds good on paper, but what you need to know is the subtext. Cerberus bought 80% of Chrysler from Daimler AG for $7.4 billion in 2007. Now Cerberus says it doesn't have the funds necessary to bail out Chrysler. So Bush isn't really bailing out Chrysler. He's bailing out a private equity firm called Cerberus. But it gets even more interesting. General Motors sold a 51% stake in its GMAC finance unit to an investor group led by Cerberus Capital Management in November of 06. Cerberus again. In October of 06, John W. Snow, the former Treasury Secretary under G.W. Bush, was named chairman of Cerberus. It gets even more interesting. Dan Quayle is chairman of global investments for Cerberus Capital Management. So I ask the question, why would George W. Bush choose to bail out two companies controlled by Cerberus Capital Management, which is controlled by old Bush cronies, Dan Quayle, John W. Snow? Now, I've asked the question. I think you know the answer. The answer is the mark of the beast. And on that note, we will play Jingle Bells by Teddy Savage and go to the break.
Obviously have made a decision to make sure the economy doesn't collapse. I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system. And I'm so sorry we're having to do it. I'm not real happy about the fact that there have been excesses in the financial markets, which are affecting hardworking people and affecting their retirement accounts. Having said that, I'm very confident that, with time, the economy will come out and grow and people's wealth will return.
It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. Who said that? John Snow, Dan Quayle, George Bush, or Ron Blagojevich? Of course, none of them said it, but it's an interesting statement. Now, it doesn't mean that every rich man is corrupt or evil. In fact, I know rich men who are good men. However, when we look around the landscape of America, it's kind of hard to find any right now. It's heartbreaking to see the Madoffs. And the governors, the president himself, he bails out. They tell us he's bailing out General Motors, but he isn't. He's bailing out Cerberus Corporation. And Cerberus is a private capital management firm that chaired by John W. Snow, former Treasury Secretary under George W. Bush. And Dan Quayle, remember that genius, is chairman of Global Investments for Cerberus Capital Management. Have either of these two gentlemen recused themselves from any of the bailout or loan money? No. So, look, it's open mic to Mike Friday. Cerberus is the name given to the entity, which in Greek and Roman mythology, by the way, is a multi-headed dog which guards the gates of Hades to prevent those who have crossed the River Styx from ever escaping. Ho-ho! Aptly named Cerberus Corporation. Cerberus Capital Management, Chairman John W. Snow. Chairman of Global Investments, Dan Quayle. Cerberus in Greek and Roman mythology, multi-headed dog, which guards the gates of Hades to prevent those who have crossed the River Styx from ever escaping. Wow. So you have to ask yourself a question. Does that mean we're locked in Hades forever because of these situation, or are they? I think the answer is quite obvious to you. Well, you know, normally I can do this business year in and year out, and it gets to me up to a certain point, and then I can walk away from it. And although I'm obsessed with the news, ask my few friends that I have, and I have very few friends that I talk to because I'm a recluse at this point in my life. I can't stand talking about politics after I'm off the air. I think about them, but I don't talk about them because this is what I do for a living. In other words, if a man flies a jet 3 hours a day, he doesn't take time off from the jet to go fly another jet. So you get what I'm saying? But I think about it. Now, the fact of the matter is I'm able to compartmentalize normally what's going on in the world from what's going on inside me. I can't anymore. All of the barriers are broken down. I last straw that this man is still walking the streets of New York, that this man is sneering and smirking at the American people, that Blagojevich blatantly gets up there and says he's innocent, that Bush gets up there and says he's bailing out the auto industry when we know there's a connection to John Snow and Dan Quayle, in my opinion, and that they have not taken a cut in one nickel of their benefits. You know, you hear about Madoff, and you hear about the Lehman Brothers. Has anyone asked where the money is going, the $17.4 billion of my money and your money, where it's going with regard to the auto industry bailout? What about John Snow and Dan Quayle? Have they agreed to give up bonuses, perks? Hey, of course not. Why? Mark of the Beast. And what do I mean, Mark of the Beast? They're all members of one club. At a certain level, you don't need an actual tattoo on your hand to become a member of that club. There's access, period. And once you're in it, you know you're in it. No one else gets in that club. We're in the end of days. And that's what worries me, because, you see, nature abhors a vacuum. It's a rule of the law, one of the laws of physics. Nature abhors a vacuum. And nations that have entered this state before have seen that vacuum filled with terrible men of the most frightening proportions. Nature abhors a vacuum. And there's a vacuum of so many things in the country today that I dread what's going to fill it, to be honest with you. But let's not get too philosophical right now. I only have a Friday to get through. And we'll worry about Monday next Monday. And if you want to call on these topics, Cerberus acquisitions, Madoff, or any such topic, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. or read about them. Again, please go to michaelsavage.com. I don't need you to go there. I don't get anything from it. But you're going to get a lot from it. Bush cronies tied to auto bailout. Nobody in the media has caught that connection yet. Nobody. I want you to think about this. I want you to ask yourself, how is it that news bureaus, ABC, CBS, NBC, the Fix News service, how come even Fix News is not reporting on this? Why is Fix News not reporting on this? Houston, Texas. Steve, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. My topic is regarding the Cerberus Capital Management Corporation. I am a firearms enthusiast, and Cerberus has been performing acquisitions of as many firearms companies in America as possible. And my theory behind this is that are waiting for Barack Obama to outlaw guns so they can clean it all up with one swipe and they can get money from the government for giving up our
Oh my God. What a horrible idea, and I bet you're right. Knowing how devils work, I agree with you 100%. If they're acquiring firearms companies and ammunition manufacturers, it's only for one reason. That's so they can control the entire industry and do whatever they want with it all at once, with the stroke of a pen, take away the Second Amendment. It's unbelievable to me what's going on. I'm telling you, what we see going on is not accidental. The socialization of American business, the meltdown of democracy, absolute fraud, criminality. There's something behind all of this. Something's much bigger than here, than all of this, Steve. Okay, man, that's a good one. That's a good one. Whoa. 1-800-449-8255. Pardon me for not being humorous today. Pardon me for not entertaining you sufficiently. You'll have to forgive me that I'm not laughing about the bailout, Blagojevich, Bernie Madoff, Rat Boy John Wicker, Lynn, whatever, George Bush in the throne shoe and the Secret Service being asleep. That really got me sick. To see the Secret Service go to sleep with the shoe and then to see them get away with justifying it, saying it shows the great restraint they have. I never saw anything like this. This is all in 1 week. It's all in 1 week, man. And there's still plenty of time left for Bush to do his mischief. Mark my words, it's not over yet.
Savage.
Is one way to gain attention. It's like going to a political rally and having people yell at you. It's like driving down the street and have people not gesturing with all five fingers.
And I thought it was interesting. I thought it was weird. I thought it was unusual to have a guy throw a shoe at you. But I'm not insulted.
It's a size 10 shoe that he threw.
Is there something wrong with this picture? Is there something wrong with the whole picture? If you threw a shoe at a president, you'd go to jail probably for 10 years in America. So now Bush is saying it's okay to throw a shoe at a president? But that misses the whole point. The point is the Secret Service was flat-footed there, in my opinion. We talked about it when it happened. Tulsa, Oklahoma, Eric, what do you think? Did the Secret Service fail, as I think?
Absolutely they failed. They were in the wrong position. They're facing the wrong direction, and they should never let the principal wave them off. That is up to the agent in charge. That's his determination whether or not it's safe or not safe, or whether the president needs to get evacuated, or everything's okay. That's his determination. That has nothing to do with the president.
Well, who was in charge of his security detail? Is that public knowledge? Is this somebody new? Did someone new come in that let this happen?
I don't know. I don't know about that. But I know in general, the agent in charge is the one that's in charge of...
Well, look, I'm an outsider looking in. I see my president, a shoe misses his eye by centimeters, then another one misses by centimeters. And I ask myself, why didn't the Secret Service agent leap up like a football player and catch an interference? You know what I mean? Like a pass. That could have been done, right? If they were not asleep.
Well, they're in the wrong place. You got one guy tripping over the chairs, trying to get into position when he's out. He's off on the sidelines eating cake or something, and And then you've got the agent in charge. He should be behind the president, either standing up or in a chair, off to the side. That way he can grab him by the waist and by the shoulder and deflect whatever or just get him out of the way.
I hear you. Right. In other words, pull him away. But there was no one there.
And there should have been somebody in front of the stage facing the crowd. That's the main
thing. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. There could have been someone squatting in front of the podium.
Yeah, grab something from under his chair after he was already yelling and agitated, and they're in a war zone. As soon as he pulled up, it doesn't matter what's in that guy's hand. He should have been dropped halfway on his way
up. I agree 100%. In fact, I understand agents are trained to watch any suspicious movement. The minute he reached down to his shoes, he should have been stopped. That would have been the end of it and taken out of there. All right, it's a very dangerous precedent. I agree with you on that. New York City, WOR. Eric, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I think one of the reasons why the movie Before the Devil Knows You're Dead struck such a chord with you is because, really, that's kind of a metaphor for what's going on with the oligarchy in our country. They're basically functioning like the two brothers in the movie. Basically, they're desperate, and you know they're looking for some kind of scapegoat. And it reminds me a lot of what Bush said the other day, where he said, you know, we're only going to temporarily, you know, become socialists in order to preserve capitalism. That's kind of like the two brothers in that movie, where they said we're basically going to temporarily just rob our parents' jewelry store in order to, you know, preserve our lifestyle.
Unbelievable. I you know, it's funny how people have such creative views of things. I can see that. I really can, Eric. Have you seen any movies since that you liked as much?
No, nothing even close to that in terms of...
Wasn't that a great movie? I watched it three times, I mean, over a period of about 3 weeks. It was so well done.
There's really... I mean, every other movie is basically, you know, guys wearing gold chains and rapping and, you know, I don't know, girls, you know, wearing nothing. And, you know, you get to a certain point and, you know, I'm far from a prude, but I mean, you know...
It's boring already, right? With what you could see on the internet, you don't need to see that. No, this had depth to it, which is why it didn't do that well in the movie theaters. In other words, the gold chain rapper crowd wouldn't understand this because, first of all, you need to have at least a 6th or 7th grade command of the English language to follow it, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Then you need to have read at least one book to understand how good this was. So that already rules out 99% of the moviegoers.
Yeah, and the best character in the whole movie, I thought, as great as Albert Finney was and the other guys, was the old man who broke the news to Albert Finney that his son had was the one who did
it. Oh, the jeweler at the end? Who played that part?
He's a great actor. That was a great part.
You know, at first I thought it was the guy from The Sopranos who played Carmela's father, the builder. At first he had a reminiscent of that very lean, you know, kind of older Italian guy, but then I looked, it didn't look like him. I don't know who it was. All right, thanks for the call. Oh, my, glad it's Friday, TGIF. I think I'm going to go to bed after the show and not get up till Monday, you know, like have delivery. I can't, though, with the medical report I got yesterday, the cholesterol and the blood sugar, everything was off, just off. It's horrible, just horrible. Well, that's what you get. Stress does definitely. So I'm increasing my vitamin E multi. My tocopherols are going up. I may go on Pravacol because it's a water-soluble cholesterol-inhibiting agent rather than fat-soluble cholesterol-inhibiting agent. I'll try that one. You know, we'll go down that route. And cut out a few of the carbs at night. You know, go down that road. And you definitely ramp up the things I've been doing. You got to ask yourself, though. Well, I'm not going to do a health show right now. That's all. It's what's running on my mind. 1-800-449-8255. Mobile, Alabama. Jim, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I'd like to make a comment on why Madoff targeted the Jewish community in particular. And what it stems from is the Jewish race as it is has always been based on law and always have been the followers of law. And Madoff knew that the present law would fail them. For example, let's say if by now taken some hammers, smashed off their hands and feet, and they'd have gotten their money back. But the Jewish people, being that they live by law, are going to try to approach this through that means, and it's not going to work.
Oh, my God. So it was a safe target, in other words. Jim, how did you figure this out?
Well, it's just in reading. If you the Jews were the
no, but I'm saying the way you it's interesting the way you presented it. There wasn't a tinge of racism in it, you know, which people would expect. The minute you say Jews, people think you're already going to say something racist because they're sensitized to that. But you didn't. You said it in such a clear-minded way, which means you've analyzed this pretty carefully. Are you a religious man yourself?
Yes, sir.
Well, yes, sir. That's very intriguing. So those who live by the law die by the law. Is that what you're saying?
Well, traditionally, yes, in the past, maybe.
I'm sorry to say that. You know what I think of the law, don't you?
That's right. It doesn't work.
You know, Samuel Johnson, the great British essayist of the 18th century, I believe. I think I'm on the right century. He wrote, "The law is an ass," meaning, you know, it's stupid. I've also heard lawyers say, "Don't confuse justice with the law," or "Don't confuse law with justice." I mean, you've heard all of those things, haven't you?
Yes, sir.
So if he had targeted, yeah, organized criminals and took their money and became a guy giving them fake returns, there wouldn't be any kind of a public story at all. They'd get their money back if they found out that it was gone. He wouldn't be in his apartment.
That's correct.
Very, very interesting. Well, it goes back to why the movie The Godfather was such a big hit back in 1972. Remember, Jim, were you around at that time?
Yes, sir. I'm 54 years old.
You know, I've seen this analyzed 1,000 times. You know, the movie The Godfather, the trilogy in particular, but the first one, the reason it hit such a chord is that the country was so corrupt at that time as well that people, everyone was asking, how can they get justice? They knew they couldn't get it through the courts. They knew they couldn't trust Congress. They knew that the judges were bought and sold. And so everybody in their heart of hearts wished they knew a Don Corleone who they could go to in a time of need to solve problems. Isn't that basically why he was such a popular figure?
That's correct.
All right. So here we are again. And that's what I was saying earlier, I was alluding to, Jim. When you have a vacuum of this nature in a government, there's going to be some horrendous individuals stepping in to pick up the pieces. And it's not good in the end of the day, and then at the end of the day for any of us. But that's what's going to happen. Jim, thank you very much for the call. Boy, I have smart callers, I got to tell you. I've said that, and I've had people fill in for me who tell me, you know, they do other shows. They've never seen a show like this in that I attract some of the most insightful callers in America. And I got to tell you, as good as I am, and I can be good, I can be silly, but I can be good when I'm good and I'm focused. I'm at an 80 today. I'm doing an 80. I can feel it. Maybe 80, 78, 79. But when I'm good, I'm good. But when my audience is good, they're great. I want to thank you for listening and contributing to this program. And I think it's what makes talk radio worth listening to without knocking anybody or putting anyone down, you know. We have ready for you, for example, when The Undertaker comes to The Godfather right at the beginning of the movie. Remember that scene? Let's play it.
I raised my daughter in the American fashion. She found a boyfriend, not an Italian. 2 months ago, he took her for a drive with another boyfriend. They made her drink whiskey. They tried to take advantage of her. She resisted. She kept her honor. So they beat her like an animal. When I went to the hospital, her nose was broken. Her jaw was shattered. Help. To get up by wire. She couldn't even weep because of the pain. These two boys were brought to trial. The judge sentenced them to 3 years in prison and suspended the sentence. Suspended the sentence. They went free that very day. I stood in the courtroom like a fool. And those two bastards, they smiled at me. Then I said to my wife, for justice, we must go to Don Corleone.
And my friends, that's what Mike sees. We're going to be reduced to warlords in this country, as sure as I'm standing here, where people are going to have to join around powerful men who can protect them, not only from others, but from the government itself. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Very
secretive, and you really didn't. You were invited into these groups, and you didn't really ask a lot of questions. It's just the way it was, and that's probably one of the key problems with these kinds of funds, is that they're private, and you really don't want to talk about it. And you're happy to be in them because the returns are so fantastic. It was such a great vehicle over so many decades that the idea really was to keep as much in as possible, because that became your sort of your nest egg, your retirement. So. It was a pretty good deal for a long time, for decades and decades, and people lived on this for a long time. And you know, I always had a sort of a sick feeling. I think everybody that was involved in this probably had a sense that one day this mall might come home to roost.
That's 55-year-old Robert Chu and his wife, who believed that their $650,000 investment had grown to $1.2 million. But they learned last week that it had all disappeared. All a result of Bernie Madoff. Now, if you think that's bad, you're right. If you think Bernie Madoff is going to spend a day in jail, I doubt it. There's an article on michaelsavage.com linked up from the New York Post. You got to see this. She's a beautiful girl, really gorgeous. She's 36. She's a stunning Swedish countess. She's in the middle of a divorce from a 66-year-old man. And her lawyer says that she needs $53,000 a week in order to get by. That's more than half than what half the households in America earn a whole year. It's higher than the cost of attending an Ivy League school for a year. But Marie Douglas David has no job, no assets, yet she says she needs $53,000 a week. That goes for, let's see what the weekly expenses are. Travel, $8,000 a week. What? Wait. That's $400,000 a year for travel. Car service, $700 a week. That's $100 a day for a car service. Dry cleaning, about $100 a day. Flowers, $600 a week. Clothing, $4,500 a week. I don't spend that in 2 years. I don't buy. Personal trainer, $250 a week. Horse care, $1,570 a week. Gifts, $1,000 a week. Restaurants, $1,500 a week. That's $200 a night. Big deal. Physical therapy, $450 a week. Skin care, $1,000 a week. Personal assistant, $2,200 a week. I don't believe this. Domestic help, $1,480 a week. $1,500 a week for a maid? Maintenance rent mortgages for New York City penthouse, Sagaponack retreat, and three properties in Sweden, $27,000 a week. So Marie Douglas David, a strange wife of former CEO George David, spends more in 1 week than most people see in a year. And at a hearing in Hartford Superior Court, the husband agreed to pay her $978,000 until their legal teams work out the terms of their divorce, including whether a $43 million post-nup she signed is still valid. After 6 years of marriage, the countess wants to keep the couple's 10,000-square-foot penthouse on Park Avenue, and she's willing to let David keep the weekend retreat on Long Island. Now, this guy is a former investment banker for Lazard Asset Management. I want to pause right there. Douglas David is a former investment banker for Lazard Asset Management. Really? And how did Lazard Asset Management do over the last few months, David? And whose money is it anyway, David? Well, anyway, that's for the honest courts and judges to figure out. You know it'll all work itself out in the great American judicial system. Don Corleone, where are you now that you need? Now that we need him? Yeah. Now you understand how China, which was once a great economy, you know, in the year 1000, China had six masted ships plying the earth. They were so advanced in technology that the rest of the... While your ancestors in Europe were swinging in trees, the Chinese had very, very advanced technologies and literature. And yet China then devolved and collapsed in a very short period of time into a series of regions that were ruled by warlords. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Okay, John in New York, WOR, you're next up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mike, it doesn't really matter which party or political ideology is in power at any given time. We're losing rights. It's just a matter of which rights.
Sure. Let's say the shoe salesman, Tom McCann, had won. I mean, John McCann. Do you think it would be any different today if John McCann had won?
No, but, well, what would be different is the rights would be losing. When you have Republicans and a conservative ideology, you tend to sacrifice rights for an unattainable, perfect law and order. And when you have your Democrats and your liberal ideology, we lose rights for an unattainable equality. And it's just a matter of sliding down the slope. And eventually, you know, as we have 8 years of a Republican, we lose rights that are more law and order oriented.
Right. The two parties are totally bankrupt. We know that. In addition to having bankrupted the Treasury, they've bankrupted the political system itself. We desperately need a third party that could teach them all a lesson. That's a separate story. That's a real third party. A real third party could pick up 25% of the vote by the next presidential election. I don't care who they run, as long as the person's reasonably intelligent. The problem is we have a winner-take-all system. We do not have a parliamentary system where those 25% of the votes would get a seat at the table. You understand how they rigged the system? They rigged the casino where the people can never win.
That is true, and I can tell
you. They rigged the casino so you can never win. Even if you create a third party, and even if you win 25% of the vote, you still don't get a seat at the table. You get nothing. Because it's a winner-take-all system, which means whoever has more money wins. And that's why the country's melting down, John. Thanks for the call. I wanted to say something about that guy's last call. Yeah, oh, who do you think is the most unhappy today after the win of Obama? It's not the conservatives, it's the gays. You should read the gays in San Francisco, what they're saying, calling them a sellout, a phony, that they feel used and thrown in the gutter. Why? Because he appointed Rick Warren, an actual pastor who actually believes in God, believes in Jesus, who believes in morality, to do the invocation. They're going crazy. They're calling Obama every name under the sun. They said, we in the gay community have been thrown under the bus. What did they expect? What did they expect? America to embrace homosexual values because Obama won? What world do they live in? Answer, California. A world of complete and total self-deceit, amongst all other things. I'll be back for another big hour. Be here or be nowhere. It's the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Teddy for president. Bush cronies tied to auto bailout is the lead story. No one seems to be able to follow the dots or connect the dots and understand what Bush really is doing here. But if you actually look at the bailout, that is the so-called loan of the two auto companies, you have to see the connections. Because it turns out that John W. Snow was United States Secretary of the Treasury under George Bush. But he's been chairman of Cerberus since 2006. Cerberus, as you well know, bought 80% of Chrysler from Daimler AG for $7.4 billion in 07. Why would they have bought a failing company if they didn't see this coming? You think they don't know what's coming downstream? In other words, they buy 80% of a company that's not doing well. Do you think they don't see this coming the following year? Dan Quayle is chairman of Global Investments for Cerberus Capital Management. I don't understand why I have to be the one to point these things out. It should be the leftists doing it or the conservatives doing it, but they all have their own agendas. I have no agenda whatsoever. None whatsoever. Here's some other stories I haven't gotten to yet. California Supreme Court, so-called, allows Good Samaritans to be sued for non-medical care. I swear to God, you have to see the story on my website. Being a Good Samaritan in California can cost you everything you're worth. And that's because of a moron in a black robe on the Supreme Court. One moron on the Supreme Court, one dunce, Justice Carlos Marino, is the man who wrote the opinion saying that although the Good Samaritan had good intentions in rescuing a friend after an auto accident, the Good Samaritan did not perform her tasks properly, caused the accident victim to suffer further injuries, and the Good Samaritan can be sued for damages. It's incomprehensible that a moron like Justice Carlos Marino could stay in a black robe after this. But then again, I live in the state of California where the homosexuals will soon prove who runs the state. And, of course, the people are worthless in this state. They'll do nothing. California Supreme Court allows a Good Samaritan to be sued. You have to read the whole story because you're not going to believe what you read. You're going to say, wait, let me read it three or four times. This has been going on for a long time. And it's a 4-3 ruling that allows a 27-year-old Los Angeles woman to go to trial in her suit against a friend who pulled her out of a wrecked car and in the process allegedly caused injuries that left her permanently paralyzed. Now, I ask you, what kind of country are you living in when a moron like Justice Carlos Marino can say, well, you may have meant well, but you didn't do it right. You didn't carry your friend out carefully enough, so you can't dismiss this suit, and we're going to have her sue you. The court majority said that the law that the friend tried to dismiss the suit with, well, it's too complicated for me to read it to you, but I'm telling you, it can't get any worse. Yes, it can. It can get much worse, and it will. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, Toledo, Ohio. This and any other topic is fair game, Jim. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Michael, from Toledo, the home of the Jeep, owned by Cerberus.
Oh!
Yep, it was
the home of
here.
The Jeep. The home of the Jeep owned by Cerberus Corp.
Chrysler. Mm-hmm. Anyways, it was born here in World War II. Michael, if I remember properly, George Bush 41 was heavily involved in Cerberus.
Oh. So in other words, the current president, although he's bailing out the auto industry, maybe bailing out his own family?
Exactly. And, of course, Dan Quayle's there, too, so something is smelling.
Well, as you well know, we have such a justice system that I'm sure the proper authorities will get to the bottom of this. You know that, Jim.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the proper authorities, yeah. Jim, let me send you a copy of Psychological Nudity. I'm going to give them away this entire hour to anyone who gets on the air. Stay on the line. I can no longer guarantee them for Christmas, but you can still order them for years to come. By the way, we're through it because I can't guarantee no matter what I do that you're going to get it for Christmas. Santa cannot deliver it in time. Maybe. I doubt it, you know. New York City, Donna, you're next up on the Savage Nation from WOR. What's on your mind?
Michael, I listen to you religiously every evening, and I just want to call and say thank you. Merry Christmas. That's right. I said it. Merry Christmas. And God bless you. And, Michael, I was listening the night that you announced that you were going to stay on the radio. And you made, it was the one bright spot in a very, very dull year for me. And I'm sure for a lot of other people. Because, Michael, we need you more now than ever. Because when I listen to you, I feel as though it gives me hope and ammunition. Because at least I can see through the clutter of what's going on, and I tell everyone.
Well, that's the thing. It's the reason that keeps me going. In other words, I know I can't make a difference because the corruption is so great, the amount of money is so overwhelming, the government is so broken down that I don't think I can make a difference. However, at least we can talk about it. We can still have the freedom. We still have the freedom to talk about the evildoers within our own government, and I'll say it like it is, the evildoers within our own government who are destroying this great country and destroying this great system. It's the last freedom we have. But Donna, I have a terrible fear that that's also going to be attacked very shortly, and we'll wind up the way Mexico is or some other despotic nation. I don't want to go there. Thanks for the call. I should have given her a book. Did you like my Teddy doing Jingle Bells? I thought that was fun. How do you feel about the California Supreme Court, so-called, ruling that a good Samaritan who tried to rescue her friend can now be sued by the friend for damages because she didn't rescue her properly? I never saw anything like it. How do you feel about Hillary Clinton for the Secretary of State position now that we know that Bubba was raking the money in from the ancient lands of Arabia as though it was his personal ATM? How do you feel about that? You think Hillary can still do an honest job? Yeah, all right. Sure, she could do an honest job. Uh-huh. It's the same way Fix News does an honest job on jihadists amongst us, since they're 18% owned by Arab money, by Prince Ali Wali 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 Hali Hali Ali Baba. Since Prince Ali Wali 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 Baba owns 18% of Fix News, it's why they never talk about jihad, if you notice. If you actually study how many times Fix News covers stories about jihad, you'll see it's very low. And that's because they don't want to offend Prince Ali Wali 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 Ali Baba, who owns 18% of Fix News. It's the way it works. And it's the way it should be. They're not a governmental agency. They're not supposed to be fair. They don't have to interest you with fairness. It's a private enterprise. If they want to report only positive news about Saudi Arabia and jihad, they can do so. Don't be so shocked. Mike on WTNT, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Hey, Mike, I want to talk to you about bookmakers. We both grew up in New York. Let me tell you something. You know, wise guys that did the old stock scam, the treasury scam, in the old days they were selling some bonds, and they went to jail 4, 5, 6, 7 years. Is it a? I mean, you got your finger on this. You notice everybody who's doing the country in came out of Harvard.
Yes, correct. If they don't have an A, E, I, O, or U at the end of their name, and they all went to Yale, and they're bigger crooks than organized criminals ever were.
This is organized, Mike. New York was disorganized. That's why they were broke and went to jail.
Are you still there, Mike, or we got cut off?
No, I'm here. I'm here.
Mike, if you add up all of the money that was made by all of the organized criminal families since 1900, do you think it would exceed the amount of money stolen by Bernie Madoff?
No. It would have exceeded.
I want to lay it on the line. If someone could do the math, there's got to be someone who can do this quickly. You take all of the prostitution, gambling, drug dealing that has been done in this country, and I want to know if it exceeds the amount of money stolen by Bernie Madoff, plus, let's say, the Treasury Secretary, in my opinion, with the bailout money. Throw that into the loop.
It would have beat Bernie Madoff, there's no doubt about it. Vegas did that alone. The thing is, they would have never beat Don George Bush. George Bush is a trip. You got this guy, remember, Mike, you said last month, this ain't over yet. We got another few weeks.
Yes.
How much more is going to go down in another few weeks?
Well, he just bailed out to his friends in Cerberus. He claims it was an auto bailout. But we know now the money's flowing to Dan Quayle and Jon Snow and possibly his own father. How come nobody in the media caught that one, Mike? Those have been studied, but nobody's really looked at the Cerberus group. Why did they buy Chrysler a year ago for $7.4 billion when Chrysler was a dead duck then? Why did they buy it? Did they know something was coming that we don't know?
It's a bust out. Remember in the old days in New York, they used to call it a bust out? The guys would buy.
Yes, like on a Sopranos, when they take over, a guy gets behind on the VIG, they go into his business, they take over his store, suddenly the interest is so great, they take over the store itself. Then the shelves start to empty out, correct?
Right, it's a bust out.
Right, and then what? Then they buy airline tickets on his credit cards, and by the time people catch on, there's nothing left but a pair of jockey shorts hanging from a rack in the sporting goods store.
But we got good FBI agents. We got FBI agents that know how to charge overtime for sleeping.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the important thing, Mike. The important thing is that we have such top-flight guys who are doing their job. I'm afraid that Blago's going to walk now. The way he stood up today, didn't he speak as though he's going to get away with that, too?
got to give him credit, Mike, because he knows they're not going to take him. Listen, what he knows on all these guys, he's going to walk. He's going to get a cakewalk. He knows it.
You mean because he has so much on Obama, he knows that he's going to get a pass?
Absolutely. It's a mistake.
So in other words, the person who's liable to lose is the U.S. prosecutor. The U.S. attorney's liable to wind up losing out of this.
I'm going to go to the post office.
How do you entertain yourself in Washington, D.C., Mike? You still work?
I just passed Freddie Mac. And don't forget, I want my book. Don't hang up. I want my Christmas present.
Oh, come on. With all the money you took out your whole life, you need a free book? Mike, stay on the line. Stay on the line. I love callers like that. As I said to you, the only joy I have left in life is having a good time once in a while on the radio show, laughing with the dog, an occasional glass of wine, you know. That's about it. Estimates for total global money laundered, $500 billion equals 1.5. What do you mean total global money laundered, guys? What does that mean? What do you mean by laundered? Laundered by whom? $1.5 trillion? Okay. So we just got a report from my esteemed team. Charles is working for the Savage Nation now. He's the new lead producer. Charles says there's an estimate for total global money laundering. That would mean, I guess, the illicit profits of crime, ranging between $500 bill and $1.5 trill. Paulson, Henry Paulson, the head of Treasury, has taken $2 trillion and dispersed it in secret ways. He won't even disclose it to Bloomberg. Do you understand what I just said to you? Do you have any idea what I just said to you? It's unbelievable to me. You know, I smiled only once today. I swear to God, I got to tell you, I'm getting really horrible. I used to be a happy guy. I smiled once today. I've been glum all day. I went up on I have a property in the country. And earlier in the day, I went to just this small 1 acre, you know. No, I'm not talking like Bernie Madoff. It's a simple farmhouse on an acre, on a hill. I went up to this farmhouse early in the day, and I walked to the top of the property, and I took a deep breath as the sun was going over the hill, and some sunlight came through the trees. I looked at the bay, and I said, you know what? This is better than the city of San Francisco. This is better than anything. It's just the land. It's the way God made it. There was something about nature itself that's eternal and will never change. The pine cones, the winter birds, you know, the sprouts coming up through the pine leaves. There was just something. I can't describe it, okay? I don't have the poetry for it. That's the only pleasure I had all day today, to show you how rotten I feel. I'll be back. Savage. All right, cut the music off. We just found something from the movie The Good Shepherd with Joe Pesci, the best scene in the movie, that summarizes everything that is going on right now. Phil Newmark on my esteemed staff here found love. I do a build-up, and I get shot in the guts.
Sit down. Some water, some coffee, whatever.
Is there someplace else we could go?
All right, Daddy, we're going down to the beach. We'll be back in a while.
Make sure they don't go into the water unless somebody's watching them.
No, I'm going to let them drown.
Make sure they put their shoes on. They'll burn their feet.
Yeah, we're getting their shoes. All right, come on. Let's go.
So what do you want to talk to me about?
The government's about to deport you for certain activities.
I'm in this country since I'm 2 months old. Does that make me Italian? I'm American. And they're trying to send me back?
I could have the deportation order reviewed. Have you classified as highly sensitive for national security? I could take the government off your back if you can help us.
Usually the guys that scare me. You're the people that make big wars.
No, we make sure the wars are small ones, Mr. Palm.
Let me ask you something. We Italians, we got our families and we got the church. The Irish, they have the homeland. The Jews, their tradition. Even they got their music. What about you people, Mr. Carlson? What do you have?
The United States of America. The rest of you are just visiting.
Thank you, Hank Paulson and George Bush, for answering our questions. We just got the answer we've been looking for. We're all visitors to their country. It's all Yale and Harvard. Don't you get it? Don't you see who did this to you? You don't get it? I mean, this is better than fiction. You're living through a bad novel. It's their country, and we're just visitors.
Savage.
We Italians, we got our families and we got the church. The Irish, they have the homeland. The Jews, their tradition. Even the they got their music. What about you people, Mr. Carlson? What do you have?
The United States of America. The rest of you are just visiting.
That says it all. See, it can make you feel better when you understand actually what it's all about. We're just peons. We're visitors to America. Even if you have money, you're a visitor. You're nothing. So a guy like Madoff, why did he smirk in the street? I kept asking myself. He alleges he stole $50 billion. It was a Ponzi scheme. Next, you see the guy walking on 64th Street like nothing happened. Blagojevich. He gets up there today. Yeah, he's breathing heavy. You can hear he's nervous. But he basically says he's not going to. They know something we don't know, which is they got it all wired. Don't you get it? Because they're wired into the guys from Yale and Harvard who own the system. So that's it. That's the whole story. The rest is nothing. It's commentary. We're still allowed commentary. That's amazing. I love that character by Joe Pesci. In fact, that movie, The Good Shepherd, was a way underrated movie. You know the screenwriter for that? Eric Roth is one of the best screenwriters in Hollywood. He said everything to Madoff. Can you believe this? A guy as cynical as that who can see through everything. You know how hard it is to write a great screenplay? Go try one. That's like everyone thinks they can write a screenplay. Everyone thinks they can write a novel. Everyone thinks they can do talk radio. Go try to write a screenplay. It's almost impossible unless you really, you have to be like a Michelangelo to do a good one. That's like almost on a level of a masterpiece. But here's a guy as smart as that who wrote that screenplay, who says he lost everything to Madoff, and he said he's the biggest fool on earth. He said himself. It just shows you what's going on in the world today. And I don't know where it ends. We still have a month left of Bush. Wait, then begins round three. We had Clinton for 8 years, and we found out why he wouldn't disclose who gave money to his library. Saudi Arabia, you name it. How could his wife be Secretary of State if the man has received so much money from these people? How? 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 That's why, I'll tell you the truth, I need a vacation. But here's the problem. I just had a vacation. I almost died on it from boredom and stress. The stress of that trip to Cancun was so great. Everyone there loved it because they're normal people. They're intelligent. Don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking people when I say they enjoyed it. Everyone there was intelligent, and they all enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy it because radio people are different. We're a different breed. Phil just said that. It's true. You know, Phil, you reminded me that the media is not one homogenous group of people. Television people are one thing. Radio people are another. And conservative talkers, of whom there are not too many, are yet another breed. We're in a whole class by ourselves. And one of these days, somebody will do a definitive history of conservative talk radio. Maybe I'll do it. You sell 12 copies of that book. But we're a different breed. I mean, there's nowhere to go for us. There's nowhere to go. There's nothing. There's no such thing as a good time, really. I mean, for any length of time. Vacation. I didn't know what to do with myself. And did I disclose where I went yet, Phil? Guys, did I tell him where? No, I didn't. Yeah, I went to Cancun. I wouldn't have picked it, but people in the family like beaches and they like safety. So we talk, all right, let's go, Dad. They took me to Cancun. Now, I got to tell you something. I had the top floor, because I said to my son, I said, please don't include me. I said in advance, I said, please go without me because I'm only going to make everybody miserable. No, you got to go. You need a vacation. This hurts you. So I went along reluctantly. Now, I got to tell you, it was top of the line, everything you could ask for. I said, I need to sleep on a top floor, no one above me, because I can't sleep if someone's above me. I don't sleep for 2 minutes. Every requirement, no smoking. So he gets me the top floor, suite, cross ventilation, air coming, blowing through the room, everything you can imagine, right? I come in, I sit on a bed. It was like sitting on a suitcase. I said to myself, I'm in the Ritz-Carlton top floor, and the bed feels like a bust-out joint in Atlantic City in the 1950s. It felt like a mattress joint, a Motel 6 off Highway 101 in the 1950s somewhere in Marin County. The mattress was like a rock. And I had talked to the guy before getting there. I said, look, I'm not a SEAL. I'm not a Navy SEAL. I like a sword. I like, you know, here's my, look, it's my requirements, right? And all right, nothing. We could do nothing. So they're going to set up a mattress pad. They put a mattress pad down, still a suitcase, hard as a rock, a board. It felt like a slab in a mortuary to try to sleep on it. I knew I wouldn't sleep a minute. So I got a little already. I try to be nice to Senor, to see Senor. I'm a nice guy. I don't start screaming, yelling like a putz. You know what I'm saying? Everything I'm trying to do nice. See Senor, Senor, amigo, see amigo, amigo. I'm throwing the money around. I am not a cheap guy. I grew up in New York. I spend money. If I throw $20 bills around, that's a lot of money in Cancun. Let me tell you, and I'm not boasting. I do it because they're poor people, and they deserve it. And they didn't do it. It's the cheap bums who own the hotel that did it, that they bought a set of mattresses for all their hotels across the world, probably from a subsidiary of Bernie Madoff. That's the best I could figure. You know, they paid, I don't know what they got. And it's not the third time I had this with a Ritz-Carlton. So I said to him, and he said, si, senor, the mattress cover. I get mad. I rip the cover off. I rip off the sheet, and guess what's under there? A blood stain. It looks like either someone gave birth on the mattress or there was an assassination in the room. His eye, the Mexican guy's eyes, he couldn't believe it. I didn't know there'd be blood on the thing. And it was not too old. I got to picture it if you think I'm making it up. I know you think I'm making this up. I took a picture with my Sony. I've not put it up on my... Because he was appalled. Within about an hour, a new mattress arrived, also like a board, but at least it didn't have blood on it. And they put enough covers and this and that, whatever. Everything was perfect. I still couldn't sleep for 10 minutes. For 1 minute, I didn't sleep with them. Then it's young people. I went with three young couples, and they wanted the first night some expensive dinner on the beach. Now, I was not paying for it. I was a guest. Not that I wouldn't have, but they wanted, and, you know, they're doing a dinner on the beach. I'm sitting on the – they set up a tent on the beach and the rolling surf and pan. The girls are beautiful and the guys are good looking. Oh, we're sitting, we're having – I'm praying. I wish to God I could be back at home in front of a television set with a meal that I cook watching the news or something. But I didn't say anything. I wouldn't order wine there because it's Mexico. And in Mexico, the duty on wine is 40% to begin with. And number two – the quality of wine is very bad because of the heat and the transportation, so you don't do wine. The beer I ordered was no good. There was no, well, I did. I drank. Did I drink? What? I don't even know what they were drinking. What kind of beer? The beer was no good, NG. I couldn't even get like an Alk buzz going on the beach. I'm trying to be nice, going along with it. Da 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 da. We sat 20 minutes. They didn't put a piece of bread on the table. 40 people were running around the tent. There was not a piece of bread on the table for like 20 minutes. So finally I said, could we get, it's coming, senor, again, si, senor, amigo, amigo, si, senor, amigo, amigo, si, senor, amigo, amigo, gracias, oh, gracias, amigo, si, senor. So finally they put bread on the table. I took a bite of it. I spit it out for the rats on the beach. It was full of sugar. So I said, amigo, come here, por favor, no sugar, no azúcar in the bread. Oh, you wanted that bread. I said, yeah, I didn't want cake. It's not like the French Revolution let them eat cake. Can I have a piece of bread? Anyway, then I said to the ceviche, beriche, I'll tell you the truth. The only good meal I had down there was in an Argentinian restaurant. Why? Because I took a walk on my own, a long one in the inn, and I saw a place where Mexicans went, the middle class, and I saw it was owned by the Argentinian gauchos. And I figured, all right, these guys know what they're doing, and the food, it was very good. Excellent. That was the one good meal I had the whole time I was down there. But it's a stress for me to have to struggle every meal. You don't know what you're going to get. I got so bored, I wouldn't go to the beach. Everyone all day long, they were on jet skis. They went to islands, zooming around, rolling in the surf. I didn't want to go. I didn't want to do it. I read a book. What novel was I reading? It wasn't a bad one. Normally, I don't read them. I don't have the time to waste. Years ago, when I was broke, I read a lot of novels. When I was trying to figure out how to make a buck, honestly. I'd spend nights with insomnia reading novels. Now, I haven't read a novel in years. They were a waste of time, by and large. But I read this novel. It was quite good. It was called, I think, I don't remember the name of it, but you're not going to believe what the story was about. It was about buying the presidency by organized crime. And it was set like a number of years ago, and they set the whole thing up, and they find a guy who's going to run for them, and they buy the presidency, and they said the only thing we want is the RICO statute to be knocked out. Other than that, we don't care what you're doing, anything else. It's yours to do. It's an amazing novel. And whoever gets in their way, you know, doesn't get to enjoy the guacamole the next day. It was an interesting story, which intrigued me for the whole time I was there. And by the time we came home, I couldn't wait. Here I am. And that's why I say, I don't really want to go on another vacation. There's nowhere for me to go. Nowhere. There's nothing. Like, for example, this weekend. Here's another one. There's a big party in Los Angeles that I've been invited to. Big holiday party. It's going to be great. I mean, I'm talking the best. This is better than Playboy parties because that's the Playboy parties are a shot. He's already at the level of false teeth. I'm talking about young. You're talking about the good-looking people. If you really want that kind of glitzy, great party, that's what it is. I'm not going. I'm going to mope around in the rain. Why? I would rather mope around in the rain than go to another place ever again. That's how I feel. That was it. I don't want to go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Savage Nation, I feel as though I'm living in a parallel universe. I really do, by what I see going on, and I think I know who is doing it and how. I mean, you look at the bailout today of two of the, General Motors and Chrysler. Now, you look back 1 year, and you read that Cerberus, a capital management company, bought 80% of Chrysler only a year ago. Now, who would buy a company that's on the skids a year ago for $7.4 billion unless they knew something then that we don't know they knew then? And who was the head of Cerberus? John W. Snow. Who's John W. Snow? Well, he's a railroad magnate, and he's the former Secretary of the Treasury under George Bush. He's chairman of Cerberus. And Dan Quayle is chairman of global investments for Cerberus Capital Management. Why would George W. Bush choose to bail out two companies controlled by Cerberus Capital Management? Listen to the Good Shepherd. I think you'll get the picture. That's all. Austin, Texas.
Oh, yeah. We Italians, we got our families and we got the church. The Irish, they have the homeland. The Jews, their tradition. Even the they got their music. What about you people, Mr. Carlson? What do you have?
The United States of America. The rest of you are just visiting.
That's good. That's really good. Michael in Norfolk, Virginia, go ahead, please. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Good evening, Dr. Savage. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to bring something, I guess, up that I hadn't heard you discuss in a while. Back when the Iraq War got started, I remember you referring to George Bush as a kind of a Winston Churchill, and how he was, even though he seemed unintelligent, he seemed to have everything all lined up.
I think you're confusing me with some other host, man. You're wrong. I never compared him to Winston Churchill. Never.
Now, Dr. Savage, your show is like nobody else's show. And I remember
I'm not going to argue with you. If you could, I'll tell you what. I am so open to criticism that I will let you find that and we'll dig. I don't know. I would compare George Bush to Winston Churchill.
When you did it, you said...
Well, this is a moot point. Let's go back to the year 2000. He ran against Gore, correct? I was very tepid on George Bush in the year 2000. I was very tepid on George Bush in the year 2004, so don't blame me for George Bush.
Oh, no, sir. I don't want to blame you for George Bush. What I'm saying, though, is that I'm looking at where he is right now, and I say this as a person that's in the military. And this has been the most embarrassing 8 years of the 14 years that I've been in the military.
All right. Now you're talking. Now I understand. He's the worst commander-in-chief, bar none, in the history of the country.
We just can't ain't hanging on him, the entire administration. I mean, because Rumsfeld has gone off into the sunset, and he was the worst Secretary of Defense, and he's had a job before. You know, he was Secretary of Defense, if I'm not mistaken, under...
Well, to me, what worries me, Michael, is the demoralization of the military. When I see the U.S. Navy cannot fire a shot at a pirate ship, what does that tell you?
Well, it tells you that they've been deballed.
Well... Look, I have sympathy for anybody in the military who has to serve under these yellies. Michael, let me send you a copy of Psychological Nudity. Portland, Oregon, Doug, you're next up. Go ahead, please. Topic, what's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I just want to say I'm going on vacation with my wife tomorrow, and I don't think I can sleep on a hotel bed now.
Well, I have a relative who told me a long time ago that she has them remove the when she gets there. You know the bed cover that goes over the bed? She makes them remove it in front of her and bring a fresh one from the laundry.
Yes,
because
sir.
She knows what goes on in hotels.
I'm going to have to do the same thing. I know when I lay down.
Yeah, no, for one, right off the top, when they give you the Amigo job, tell them to bring you a new bed cover and throw a $10 bill at them. That's number one. If it's a good hotel, they'll do it. Number two, strip the sheets off and take a look at what you're sleeping on.
Absolutely, sir.
Yeah, and report back to duty next week when you get back. When you get back. Oh, my goodness. Kansas City, Sam, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, my friend?
Michael, I was going to say that you have the heart of an investigator. One of the things.
Well, but what good does it do, Sam, that I have the mind of an investigator when all of the roads are blocked by the so-called authorities?
Well, the thing that I was going to say is that that's why you're never happy with being able to or going on vacation, because your mind is always working about something that's going on in the nation or just something that's bothering you.
Well, that's true. The only good time I had on the whole trip was when the Blago scandal blew up the weekend I was there. I sat in the room watching it like a tape, a revolving tape, over and over and over. They saw me come alive. They said, Dad, why won't you leave the room? I said, I can't leave the room. I got to get back to my microphone. I said, I can't, this I got to get back to. Because, you know, I mean, I eat, sleep, and drink this show.
You get a scent of something like a bloodhound, and I heard you the other night talking about all the research that you do. It's the same thing that I do. I'm a retired police detective out of Kansas City. I'm an investigator now. And same thing. I get a hint of something, and as a result, I have to continue researching on it until I find the truth.
Well, first of all, Sam, please go to my website tonight and look at the Cerberus bailout connection, where I say Bush cronies tied to auto bailout. Isn't that a big story to you?
Sure it is.
Do you think anybody in the midstream media is going to follow the dots and say, wait a minute, he really isn't bailing out General Motors and Chrysler? He's bailing out Cerberus?
They might do it, but you're the first one to do it, and that's what I'm saying. You'll continue looking into this. I know you.
Well, I think that I'm the guy who throws the pebble into the calm pond and let the ripples continue to radiate out from that center, Sam. I hope that others in the media who listen to the show, particularly those in the financial sector, will look at the connections, although what will come of it is another story. You know, it's like an investigator. You can bring all the evidence you want to your mayor, and if the mayor is wants that story buried, it's going to be buried. It's like the homicide here in San Francisco in the elevator. We've heard nothing, and that's because the mayor wants it buried.
But the thing is that you have the media, as far as being able to contact a lot of people just by your show, and you have the heart of an investigator because you continue to dig, to look for just something else.
Well, I hope so. Sam, let me send you Psychological Nudity. It'll be the last book I give out today because we're just about flat out of time this hour. And I like Sam. I hope you've enjoyed Teddy's Jingle Bell song. Doug Lynn, one of the producers for the Savage Nation, created that for us. And we're going to go out the door on that one. It was so good. And also, I want to thank the crew. I guess I don't do enough of it. Charles and Phil and Doug, I know how hard it is working on this show every day, day in and day out. But as we say in radio, we're different than everybody else. And I guess we really are. So let's hear Jingle Bells. As Barked by Ted Savage. Teddy Savage, you're on.
Ha, 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 ha
that will soon be available to you as a CD. I'm joking.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Now, our leading question is, should Rat Boy be pardoned? The parents of Rat Boy, that is American-born Taliban terrorist fighter John Walker Lind, pled with President Bush to let their people go, I mean to set their son free, before Bush leaves office next month. Now, mind you, we have an American hero behind bars named Randy Duke Cunningham, who admittedly committed a crime, but compared to Bernie Madoff, he's a Boy Scout. He's been rotting in jail for at least 5 years because of a vicious, psychopathic left-wing attorney put in by Bill Clinton. And so I ask you, I mean, Rat Boy should be pardoned? Here's the real question. Of course you're going to say no, so I'm not asking that question. If Bush pardons Rat Boy, will you withhold money from the Republican Party onto the third generation? I wouldn't give them 10 cents forever. I'd bust the Republican Party till there was nothing left. It was bad enough they foisted that fraud shoe salesman on us, John McCain, who turned out to be exactly everything I said he was. The day after he lost on purpose, he becomes the Democrats' favorite Republican because he's a stooge, a turncoat. What more can the Republicans do to alienate their base is the question. Madoff struts like celebrities. Did you see the new pictures of Barry Obama that were held until now? If these pictures of Barry Obama had been released before the election, I know he would have lost. Like, if you go to michaelsavage.com, you see this sulking 20-year-old Barry Obama. And another one, he's smoking what looks like a joint. Now, I admit that all of us were teenagers and sullen, you know, young 20s at some point. But, you know, you compare this guy. I mean, look at him at 20. He's now your president. You want to see the real inner man? There it is. Take a look. How come they didn't release these pictures before the election? Barry suavely striking a pose in a leather jacket and dragging on a cigarette? He doesn't look suave to me, frankly. He looks like something other than suave. Kennedy takes a beating from upstate media. Why should she be a senator? This woman is qualified for, well, nothing but charity work. Donors list raises fears over Hillary Roll as Secretary of State. No. You mean just because Bill Clinton got $25 to $50 million from the Saudis, we shouldn't trust Hillary? No, don't be silly. No, that's no reason to reject Hillary. After all, we live in an imperial America now. And what we need is an imperial presidency and now an imperial Senate. What's the difference? It's all the same anyway. It's the House of Lords. It doesn't matter what white wig takes the job. South Korean politicians brawl over U.S. trade pact. I like watching those brawl movies of South Koreans. At least they, you know, here we have wimpy Republicans and Democrats. All they do is shoot their mouths off. At least there they beat each other up. Protesters attack police after Swedish mosque closed. Ho-hum. Ho-hum. Another Islamic riot in the North countries. Ho-hum. That's what they get for their tolerance. Oh, this may have slipped by you today. I don't know if you saw this. Barry appointed somebody to be the Secretary of Education, Arnie Duncan, and he looked like a nice white guy. Yeah, well, you figure it wasn't Al Sharpton. It could have been worse. It could have been Louis Farrakhan. I mean, let's face it. Barry didn't appoint Louis Farrakhan or Sharpton. He appointed a nice-looking white guy, Arnie Duncan. What you don't know is Arnie Duncan was the architect behind a failed plan to open a gay-friendly high school in Chicago. But the newspaper people, the people who are going out of business and who will soon be picking strawberries in Mexico at the Washington Post, decided to keep that fact out of the story. Even the Washington Post ran a story, Education Picked, is called Down to Earth Leader, but they left out the fact that Arne Duncan tried to open a gay high school. You hear this? That's the difference. Let me throw it out. What do I care? Give all the gays a high school, see if I care. You think it would matter to me? Let them all, what do they want, segregation? Give them all a, let it be a gay high school with gay teachers. That's what I say. Gay teachers, gay principal, and a gay high school. And then get back to me in a few years and see if they're better engineers and scientists come out of there. That's all I care about. That's all. What else do you want to talk about here? It's open mic to Mike, 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. I'm not bored. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong. I went to the podiatrist. That's why I'm off. Because life has jokes in store for all of us. Which, you know how I ridiculed a friend of mine whose father was like a weird podiatrist? Do you remember? Does anyone remember that shtick I did about a guy in Sunnyside who was ashamed of his father, who had a rack, and that he was so ashamed of his origins in Sunnyside that he aped the English? He wore only Brooks Brothers. He got a Jaguar. He affected an English accent, got the pipe, and eventually married a rich girl and went into the banking business. I don't know where he is today. But he was an Anglophile as opposed to an Anglophobe. And it was all a result of his being ashamed of his weird podiatrist father. I didn't know what a podiatrist, a foot doctor. So as the clock, as the world turns, here I am at my age. I never in my life, I'm in a podiatrist's office today. Because some guy knew what he was doing. He taped up my foot. So as I walked out with less pain, I said, what does that lesson teach you? I said to myself in the elevator on the way down. Everything's a lesson in life. I'm telling you, everything is a lesson. Everything that happens to you is a lesson, if you let it be a lesson. We all know that, let's say you go with the wrong girl in town and you wind up with a venereal disease. That's an obvious lesson, correct? Or I can give you bigger lessons at another time. My mind is not functioning 100%. It's a combination of the podiatrist and the treatment and the electricity in the foot. Electrical with ice. I know it's a procedure. I don't care. I figured I'd try it. And, you know, the guy taped it up. The tape worked better than anything, better than surgery. I guarantee if I went to Stanford or, God forbid, worse yet, with the foot pain I had, if I went to, let's say, the Mayo Clinic, I'd come out without a foot, in my opinion. If I went to Stanford with a foot pain, I'd come out without a right ear and a left arm. If I went to Harvard, I'd come out as a corpse and they'd sell my kidneys. So there it is. Bye today. All I want to do is get home or away from the radio studio and get in bed with my dog. I do. I want to go home with the dog already. I miss him. They don't let the dog in the city because he has to be spayed. I'm afraid of bringing the dog over the Golden Gate Bridge to the city. For any of the lava, like, grab him. I can get a San Francisco Police Department SWAT team to arrest the dog. They still haven't found who killed the Jewish homosexual activist who was thrown down an elevator shaft. We're still awaiting the autopsy report. We're still awaiting one word from the local stinking, rotten fish wrap newspaper on a murder story like this. And guess what? You're never going to get it! He was thrown down an elevator shaft, you hear, going to an Arab lesson. And it's not a story in San Francisco. You hear? No wonder they went out of business. They're losing $1 million a day. As I sit here in my studio looking out on San Francisco Bay, it's a gloomy, cold day. No rain, no slush, none of that. Which I like this weather. I love cold. But I see a ship coming in through the Golden Gate Bridge. It is a green hull. It says China Shipping Line. It is laden to the gunwales with cargo. The decks are filled with cargo. The water line, the water's washing over the water line, bringing in more dreck from China. More garbage created by slave labor and inferior goods from top to bottom. No longer made in America. Made in China. You know what that means, that label? And you know how the ships go out? Nothing. They don't take a product from us. They're filling the ships now with steel, scrap steel like to the Japanese in 1938, and hay. We're sending hay for their cattle. You hear this? That's what we're producing now, hay and steel scraps. What do we make in America anymore but websites? We make websites and pornographic movies. I'll be right back.
Savage. We'll be right back.
Woe unto them that decree unrighteous decrees, and to the writers that write iniquity, to turn aside the needy from judgment, and to take away the right of the poor of my people, that widows may be their spoil, and that they may make the fatherless their prey. So if you think that Madoff was born yesterday, you are mistaken. Evil like this has existed since Eve bit into the apple. Okay? This man is just the classic villain. And I think we've only seen the beginning of the Trail of Tears. You understand that? The question is, how does evil get away with it? The answer is because the system is evil. The system is rigged to defend the evil, not to prosecute the evil. Everything about the system is against the police. Everything about the system is against the righteous. Everything about the system is in favor of the crook and the wrongdoer. Do you understand that? Do you get it? It's only a matter of time until they take you down for something you didn't do. That's how I see it. We all live like this. We all feel like we're living in a police state that any day the innocent could be called guilty and the guilty will be called innocent because the guilty run the courts. You think there's justice in a New York court? How many oxymorons can I put in one show? Justice in a New York court? A New York judge? Are you kidding me? Well, I'll stop right here. I left New York a long time ago, not because everybody in New York was evil. It's just that I knew the system was rigged against an honest man. I knew that. I knew I could never get to the first base if I stayed there. I knew the system was rigged. It was set up a certain way. And either I wanted to stay in civil service job, and that would have been it for the rest of my life, or I wanted to take a chance and follow my own road. Now, let me tell you, it's been a rocky road. It's been a rocky road. At this point, things are good. That doesn't mean tomorrow I know what's coming. Nobody knows what tomorrow is going to bring. I understand all of that. But the fact of the matter is, I did it my way. And I had to get out of that hellhole in order to get where I am today. I never could have gotten, never mind to first base. I couldn't have gotten out of home plate. I would have been hit by a fastball and knocked out if I had stayed in New York, because everybody there that I met was throwing curveballs and stabbing you in the back. So you have to understand what happened here is not so unusual. It's just on a scale that has not been seen since, Ponzi, you know. Why is he in a limousine going out to the Hamptons or wherever? Why is he still there? Why is his apartment not sealed with yellow tape? Can't the government embarrass him in some way? Bring shame to that family? They can still walk around and go to Zabor's and buy a pastrami and no one spits in their face? New York, Harold, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for taking my call. Here's the story, okay? You and I have actually spoken a few times before. I always did comedy with you. Can't do comedy tonight. It's too serious. Doesn't involve me personally. It's a friend of mine, younger than me, someone I've known a long, long time. He comes into my store today, small store, kind of like what your father had. Small store, comes into my store. We're talking. It was his mother. His mother was bilked out of $2 million, who I know. I know her personally. The mother got the money when her husband passed away. He left $2 million, this man. And he was a powerful man in his own right. He left $2 million. This man was involved with the Mets, with Wilpon, and Wilpon went down too. So my buddy comes in today and he tells me this story. The mother lost $2 million. His sister went in with this guy also, lost another $1 million. The mother is wiped out, doesn't have a thing.
But where is the money? Harold, where is the money?
Where is the money? I don't know where is the money. How do you spend $50 billion? The guy could have bought a small country in the Caribbean with this kind of money.
Well, let's start at the top. SEC official married into Madoff family. Have you heard that story yet today?
Sure, I did, sure.
Uh-huh. Now, what does that tell you? That the SEC, a compliance official who worked for the SEC, and he found no problems at Madoff's firm in 2005. He later began to date and married Madoff's niece, who was a compliance lawyer for his own company. It's right out of The Godfather.
You know, you're right. It's interesting. I was thinking about that parallel, too, because I grew up with them back in the 70s with all the wise guys back in Rosedale. And
okay, now let's go a step further. You know the movie The Departed with Leonardo DiCaprio and all the great actors? You saw it recently with Matt Damon?
Of course, yes.
Okay, remember the Jack Nicholson character, the Irish gangster, picks a kid out of the neighborhood and puts him through the police academy so he'd have a plant inside the Rhode Island State Police. Remember that yes. character?
Yes, yes, yes.
All right, so this guy Madoff was actually telling everybody and saying, I even have a regulator in the family, and laughing about it. But he did it so openly that nobody believed him, that he would be corrupt.
He used his ethnicity to his advantage. It was just
Let's not avoid the Jewish element here. It's been written about. Did you hear my guest yesterday, Lawrence Lehmer?
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh my God! You talk about one word was operational about the Palm Beach crowd. This probably doesn't apply to your friend's mother because she wasn't in that category. $2 million wouldn't have bought her a seat at the table. We're talking about total pretentiousness from the top to the bottom. And so, there's a lot. Here's the thing, Harold. There's a lot of people saying they got what they deserved. You know that that's what's going on because most people don't have $2 million, Harold.
Yes, yes, yes. What I
so there's that going on. There's a lot of envy and jealousy and people saying, well, you know what? I didn't have $2 million to be suckered with. Who cares? You know, well, where did he get the money from, her husband?
Her husband, he was big in business. He was a publisher. He worked hard his whole life. He can't.
All right, so he wasn't the crook. He made his money honestly. He earned his own money. And then the wife, he died. The wife got it. She was taken in by this crook, and now she has nothing.
This is absolutely
all right, Nick. Thanks for the call, 1-800-449-8255. We're also talking about Shoegate on the Savage Nation, the embarrassment to the Secret Service, which is really a big deal. And I have to keep repeating it, and I'm not looking to make more of it than it is. But to me, as we talked about yesterday, one of those agents should have jumped up like a football player and interfered. I caught it like a pass before it hit the president. Certainly the second shoe, okay? And secondly, they're trained to watch movements of people, I understand. When a man reaches down for his shoe, they should have pounced on him before the shoe came off. That's another failure. That agent also should be sent to Bolivia to work in a field picking coca leaves. 1-800-449-8255. You know, it's a terrible thing to be in this business in a way, because no matter what you say, you make enemies. You understand that? You know, I'm not making any friends by saying some of the things that I'm saying today or I say every day. Some people who liked me yesterday hate me today. Some people who hated me yesterday like me today. It's the nature of the business. If you speak out, you're going to make friends and enemies. And that's the nature of the business. You have to take chances. Otherwise, you shouldn't be in this business. So forgive me if I offend you in any way today, but, forgive me in advance. That's all.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
Impairment notes that, yes, you can climb out of an elevator and can get you killed. What? A veteran elevator repairman told this newspaper several scenarios that have killed a number of his colleagues over the years, and also plausible explanations as to why Dr. Dan Kilman was found dead at the bottom of an elevator shaft earlier this month. And because the San Francisco Police Department has bled credibility like a Bernard Madoff tainted 401k of late, suggestions of murder conspiracies that by all rights should have been laughed off as delusional just couldn't be. After the investigator on the case told anyone who would listen, including Michael Savage, that this was not a homicide, the SFPD claimed that the subsequent formation of a task force led by a homicide detective was standard operating procedure. And blah, blah, blah. Before clamming up to the media at police behest, the building operators at 55 New Montgomery noted that the elevator, Kleeman allegedly died climbing out of, passed its inspection on November 4th, blah, 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 blah. There's nothing in the story. Classic Bay Area pothead writing. Well, what's the story about if there's nothing in here? Here is a guy who's a very strong supporter of Israel. He and Palestinians have hated each other for years. He goes to Arab lessons. The Arab lessons are canceled the night he goes there and he's found at the bottom of an elevator shaft. And you call that paranoia? You people are insane. You know, you people are insane because you're paranoid about the wrong things and you're not paranoid about the right things. So what I say is, where's the autopsy? Where's the autopsy of this guy? That's what I'd like to know. How come his autopsy hasn't been released? Ask the SFPD that, all you great investigative reporters. You useless idiots, you. Rob, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Hey, one of the things I'm grateful for this year is your show. I'm a new listener this year. Me and my wife started listening, and just the information and the communication points and even the debate points at times have just really been great.
Today there's going to be very little of any of that.
Well, it the more that we're educated and then we share about your
show. No, today is no education today.
Well, it's always...
No, there's no education. What do you need to know that you don't already know? Obama will save you. That's all you got to know is that liberalism is a mental disorder. Like, let me give you an example. Whenever you see a story that makes no sense, such as in New York today, a cop killer got away with murder, you scratch your head. How could a jury take a cop killer and let him off? The answer is liberalism is a mental disorder. Because if you investigate, he was defended by radical ACLU, New York Liberty Union attorneys, NYU, Columbia Law, parents were communist types. So the answer is always to be found in that one phrase, liberalism is a mental disorder, whenever you don't understand it.
Well, and we definitely believe it, my wife and I. I mean, even the stories that you talk about on the air from, your personal life from the past and stuff, and then you listen to how things are today, you can just see how drastically things have changed, unfortunately.
Well, I know, but I don't want to start sounding like Methuselah and that everything was excellent and great in my time. I mean, that really is something that most generations tend to say that. Like, when they were young, things were better. I mean, that's a classic statement. But in my case, it's true. Things were better. I mean, they were better in 1,000 different ways. And the question is, can this country of ours ever be turned around? Do you think it can?
I think it can, absolutely, because I think that the more things happen and the more educated we become from shows like your own, the more that we are able to read between the lines. And, I think you're right. I think, it will swing the other way. At least
how much worse can it get? Tell me how much worse it can get when you have a government itself robbing the people in broad daylight with sunlight on it. The Treasury Department is literally stealing $2 trillion. They won't even disclose where the money went. Tell me how much worse it can get than that.
I don't know how much worse it can get, unfortunately, but hopefully.
All right, well, I appreciate it, Rob. Thanks for the call. I don't either how much worse. I got a backache from thinking about it. By the way, has anyone found an answer to the question I raised yesterday? We understand that hedge funds are collapsing across the world. Across the world! I read one that was run by ex-49er football players, went into receivership basically today. Everyone's going broke in the hedge fund business. Madoff, this one, that one. But George Soros, who was one of the founders of hedge funds, as I understand it, and owns one of the largest hedge funds in the world, could anyone explain to me how George Soros is faring during this downturn in the hedge fund business? Question one. Question two, why has not one journalist in America sought to get the answer to that question? They're all such geniuses, all the J school graduates. They're all interested in the economy and funds. Why don't they ask themselves to look up how the Soros Fund is doing, then go to the next step without any implication whatsoever? Was there ever any connection between Madoff and Soros? Is there a current connection between Madoff and Soros, or is there not? Now, the reason I ask it is logical. It's not because I'm trying to defame George Soros. We know what a lovely, wonderful man he is and how much he loves America. The question is raised for another reason. George Soros is a money trader. George Soros trades currencies. George Soros almost broke the British pound. It cost the English government $1 billion, which is chicken feed today. And he almost broke the Malaysian currency, which set off a wave of anti-Semitism in the moderate Arab world that to this day hasn't abated. That's my understanding of what happened. Why should we assume that this man has nothing to do with what's going on in our markets today, especially since the dollar just took one of its biggest dumps in years yesterday? Could it be that Mr. Soros traded against the dollar, sold it short? Why are we not getting answers to these questions? Is there nobody watching the store? Of course not. Look at George Bush. We had yesterday a soundbite that nobody could believe I found. Do you have that soundbite where he says he had to destroy the free market to save the free market? You got to find, huh? You looking for it? pull it up? Because I don't, I can, nobody could believe it that the president would say that. Nobody. Not one person will say a thing about it. 1-800-449-8255. Montana Kyle, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Kyle, just got done reading your books, Mike. Love the part where you're talking about your acupuncturist friend with the sorter and the liver. Oh, my gosh, that was hilarious. I told that to my mom, and we were just
Let's
dying.
See. Which is the sorter is out? That's the sorter, S-O-R-T-E-R, not the sorter. I'll start to sound like Bernie Madoff, the sorter. Yeah, it's a good one, but I don't have it in my hands. Your mother, yeah. How old's your mother? How old's your mother?
My mother's 48.
She liked it?
Oh, yeah. Well, we're all conservative, man. It was funny.
But do you have acupuncturists up in Montana? They let them over the border? Did they change the sheets in those kind of shady offices? It makes you wonder. Like, you go in to have your foot done and you lay down. They don't even change the sheet. Who was on that pillow before you? So I'll be right back.
For 3,600 men and women who work for the Securities and Exchange Commission, in my experience, are extraordinarily professional. I am enormously proud of them. I'm very proud of the people who are doing the work right now on the Madoff case. I just can't emphasize enough how proud I am of our personnel, how strongly I wish to encourage them in doing their jobs. I am extraordinarily proud of the work that the SEC professionals are doing. We have very extraordinarily
professional
people.
This is Christopher Cox, the chairman of the SEC, the wolf who was guarding the chicken coop, who was covering not only for himself but for all of the deadbeats in the SEC. It gets worse. Listen to clip 3 when a reporter presses this jerk on a real answer and he doesn't get anything but PR from this fraudulent Harvard lunatic. Listen.
Does it give the SEC a black eye that this could have gone on for so long?
Law enforcement is at the heart of what the SEC does. It's why I have made enforcement a priority during my chairmanship, and it's why getting answers to these questions is so important. That's why I've asked for this review.
I don't hear the black eye answer, though. What do you think of that?
I'm sorry?
Does this give the agency a black eye that it could have gone on for so long?
The period of time during which information was reported to the SEC about Mr. Madoff is one of the reasons that I think it's
shut up.
That we
just shut up. Go directly to jail. I can't take it anymore. Why does a man like Christopher Cox get away with this? You know, the reporter should get a prize for at least trying. That's unheard of in the media today. That reporter tried to get something out of this Harvard liar, but he couldn't get anything out of him. This went on for over 10 years. Allegations were made against this Goniff, this crook, this criminal, this alleged Goniff crook criminal, this low-life thief who's walking the streets of New York. And by the way, let us say you're an inner-city mother listening to this show, and you're having trouble raising a kid, and your kid jumps a turnstile, and he is caught by a transit cop. That child will go to the Tombs, a desperately horrible prison in New York, for at least 30 days. So my headline on the Savage Nation is, jump a turnstile, go to jail, rob $50 billion, buy a judge, and stay home in your $7 million Park Avenue apartment. This is the Savage Nation. I want to open with something that I think you'll find controversial, and then you'll understand where I'm coming from. So before you jump, listen. When I was a schoolboy, wiseacres in the classroom used to joke like this. They used to say, Jesus saves, Moses invests. And people would snicker. Well, let me tell you, today, if Jesus had his money in a bank, he'd be earning 0% interest. Moses would be broke. But at least Jesus would still have his money. Now, the question is how long before this group at the SEC and the Treasury wipes out all of our savings in our banks by devaluing the U.S. dollar to near worthlessness through bailouts and loans to their insider friends. And by the way, how different is Hank Paulson from Bernie Madoff? Only time will tell us if there is a difference at all. There's another subtext to this, which is the big pregnant question that no one in the media has asked yet. And I hope that people listening to this show at CNBC and some of the other networks that actually do real reporting will get an answer to this question by tomorrow morning. Why is George Soros, the biggest hedge fund operator in the world, so far as I know, not been heard from? Has George Soros lost money during this downturn in the hedge fund markets? or has he made money? Is there any connection between Madoff and Soros? Were there any funds that were jointly owned or jointly shared? These questions are questions that need to be answered. And I'm asking the question. I've asked some legal experts, some financial experts. Nobody can get an answer about George Soros and how he is faring during this grave downturn in the hedge fund business. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. The question of the day is, qui es custodiat ipsos custodes, which I've asked for months now. I first asked it on June 12th, 2008 on this show, The Savage Nation, when I said, qui es custodiat ipsos custodes, and by the way, forgive me if my Latin is mangled. The fact of the matter is I know botanical Latin very well. I know Latin very imperfectly. But I do know what the Latin phrase qui es custodiat ipsos custodes means. It comes from the Roman poet Juvenal, and it's been translated variously as who watches the watchers? Who will guard the guards? Who shall watch the watchers themselves? The answer is nobody. Now, the fact of the matter is modern democracies were set up in a system where there was a separation of powers. The idea was to never give ultimate power to any one group. And so we put the executive, the legislative, and the judicial to sort of vie with each other. Each of these branches of government have the interests of themselves and are competing and conflicting with the others. And the theory was that each group would then find in its best interest to impede the functioning of the rest, and this would ultimately keep power under constant struggle and thereby out of any one group's hands. This has all disappeared under Bush Clinton. After 16 years, there is almost no difference between the executive, legislative, and judicial. They are in the hands of a few people. Bernie Madoff was their money man. In my opinion, Bernie Madoff was the bag man for the entire power structure, which is why that piece of garbage was seen smirking in the streets of Manhattan today, walking as though he was a movie star. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. What are you going to do with your money? I opened by saying, in my day, smart Alex in the school used to joke and say, Jesus saves, Moses invests. Well, let me tell you, today Moses would be broke if he had invested. Jesus would have no interest-bearing account, but at least he'd have his money. The question is, what's next? The Treasury has played its last card. They've reduced payments on interest in the T-bills to 0%. What is left for them to do? Well, we're going to talk about that to a great extent. I got an email today from a financial guru friend who said this to me. He said, in my opinion, there is no zero difference between the shysters. And he said, as to Moses and Jesus, they would both have had their money in biblically defined money, which are as clear as a bell: gold, silver, land, and cattle. Those are the only biblically based forms of money, all of which are physical, all of which have no counterparty risk, all of which require no trust in another man's word of honor or honesty. And he goes on, he talks about how evil men have manipulated the system, how they have continued to rape, pillage, and destroy a once great monetary system under the guise of saving that system. And he says there will be more victims and future generations of taxpayers that will have to pay for the mess these men are creating. Are you aware that this gang of thieves has tripled the balance sheet at the Fed with a stroke of a pen? Are you aware that in July of 07, the Fed balance sheet was at $850 billion, and today it is at $2.2 trillion? He asks, how can you create $2 trillion of anything and have it maintain a value? The inflation, while not a problem now, given we are in a deflationary loop, he says will be unbelievable over the next decade, causing cost of living to explode. He said, we've seen this happen over the last 30 years. Do you remember houses in 1977? Remember before the big run-up? Houses that were $40,000 in 1977 went up to $700,000. A car that cost $4,995 in 1977 is now $49,995. Okay, he says it will be worse once all this newly so-called created money gains what is referred to as money velocity. What is money velocity? My friend says that is, it leaves the banks in the form of loans and goes into the system. The only reason inflation is not exploding now is that the money is sitting in the banks. Once the banks start to lend, which is what the Fed is begging them to do, The money goes into the system. It picks up velocity, and voila, we have inflation. He says, that is why, while it may sound self-serving to some, gold is the only asset that is not someone else's liability, with no counterparty risk that you can hold, that you control and will offset their averages of a higher cost of living. We're all sympathetic to genuine charities that help people that are really needy. However, there is a silver lining in the Bernie Madoff meltdown. And the good news is that some very extremist liberal charities are now completely bankrupt, and I'm going to list a few of them for you. See, there's a silver lining in every cloud. And sure, you want money to go to the real needy in hospitals and universities, although how much of it actually gets to the needy is another question. You know, how much is taken by the gangsters who run these charities is a story unto itself. But let's focus on the fact that some extremist liberal charities were living off money coming into them from Madoff, indirectly. In my opinion, one of them is a group called JEHT Foundation, and you're going to find out in a minute who they were. The group is called JEHT, and they say they're involved in end-of-life issues. Really, what does that mean? What's end-of-life issues? Well, according to Elizabeth Semmel, director of the Death Penalty Clinic, don't you love the word clinic? Libs are big on using the word clinic. At UC Berkeley's Bolt Hall School of Shame, JET is short for Justice, Equality, Human Dignity, and Tolerance. Now, when I hear the word human dignity and I hear the word tolerance together, I reach for my Glock because I know they're coming from my freedom of speech. And so this group is no different. They work in the area of lethal injections. They don't like the fact that rapists and mass murderers are executed. And so these low-life pieces of garbage take money from charities such as those that funnel money through Bernie Madoff, and they run things called the Death Penalty Clinic at once great universities like UC Berkeley's Bolt Hall School of Shame. But the fact of the matter is, the group JEHT, short for Justice, Equality, Human Dignity, and Tolerance, works in the lethal injection area, and they were funded right to the max. Oh, they went to conferences all over the world. They probably went to The Hague. They met their girlfriends and their boyfriends and talked about how bad America was, how evil we were with the death penalty. But now that old Ganef Madoff and his alleged $50 billion securities fraud has hit these vermin, the fact of the matter is, I guess the death penalty clinic will have to stop worrying about mass murderers on death row and start worrying about making a living themselves.
Savage.